everybody. Welcome to Tadaima, a Terrace House podcast, your weekly companion to your favorite show on Netflix. I'm Robert Scarpinito, and I'm joined here by Daily Wilhelm.
Yahoo, I'm Daily.
Jack Zepeda.
Woohoo, I'm Jack.
And Colin Sparling. You know what you
Wahoo,
have to do.
It's a me, Mario.
Good.
Oh, here we go.
This is the trifecta. Identity theft is not a joke.
Would you download a car?
Here's the thing. Yes. I always would. I don't know what would stop people.
How do you do that? Is it going to be like one of those transporters like The Fly?
I mean, with 3D printing, right? It could be a reality one day.
You make a man car hybrid, and he's just like, oh God, he's a monster. Well,
it's called Cars, and Pixar did a great job.
Actually, it's called Transformers.
You don't. That's better.
I think that's a Transformer.
So, on today's episode of Tadaima, we're gearing up for the illustrious release of Part 5 on international Netflix of Opening Your Doors. And that's going to drop again on December 18. And what we're going to do is we're going to get you pumped and ready for that. We're going to go through today all of Jack's doing a dance, doing a K-pop.
We're going to lather up. We're lathering up, guys. Yep. Getting ready for the 18th, baby.
Yep. We're going to be going through parts 1 through 3. And we're not going to go through every little minutia because, let's be honest, we all kind of already know it. It's more just picking out the really big, important events, the events that stuck out to us, the events that might stick out to you. And I'm going to hand things over to Daily, who's going to spearhead today's episode and give us the lowdown.
The lowdown. Yeah. So, yeah, this was my very first, you know, introduction into Terrace House. This was the first, like, moments of figuring out, like, what is this show? And it took me a while to figure out, what is this show? But part one, I think, started out strong in terms of everyone coming into like this very beautiful house in the woods. And it kind of reminded me, like, this would be a great setting for like a horror movie. The house that they have in Kuroizawa, it seems secluded. It seems too idyllic to be true. Mm-hmm. But one thing I wanted to ask you guys about, as far as like your experience with other seasons of Terrace House, I feel like when everyone came in and was introduced, there was like a pretty big difference in ages. Like, I feel like there was a very wide range of ages, which really surprised me at first.
I feel like you guys jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that is true. Like, we started the Opening New Doors off with a pretty big age gap, and I feel like I don't think that was as true in, like, Boys and Girls in the City. I don't think there was that big of an age gap starting out in Boys and Girls in the City, at the very least. I can't remember much. I don't remember Aloha State as well. But
I remember Aloha State. Like, the oldest person there was in their mid-20s. Like, we didn't even see anyone past their 30s or approaching that even until...
Wait, throughout the entirety of Aloha State?
No, until toward the end of Aloha State.
Right.
And okay. Same with Boys and Girls. Like, as those seasons went longer, they would have, like, a wider age range. But right. For this Opening Your Doors, they kind of start off right from, like, we have a, what was it, 20-year-old, I think, is the youngest? Or no, you guys 19. 19.
Yeah, 19.
Yep.
Yeah.
19 right. to 31.
He's just a boy.
It seems like the youngest will go is roughly 18, and the oldest will go is mid-30s overall.
I don't think we've 35. Had... So Taka is, what, 33, was it?
One, I thought.
31. 31.
Oh, okay. I thought he was older. My bad.
Yeah, I thought he was older too.
He turned 32 in part 4.
Oh, that's right. He did turn 32. Have we had anybody older that we know of? How old is Senna?
What was Honda-san?
Honda-san was 28, I think, in the show. Okay. All right. Back in...
Yeah, Senna might be up there.
Boys and Girls. Senna is 31, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that gap, I think, really illustrated itself, especially because... Like, you can be mature if you're younger, but then we have someone like Yudai who, like, even though he was the youngest, he acted even younger. My first standout moment was for sure them going, like, everyone's in the house, everyone met each other, and then they go to get dinner, and Yudai's a chef, you know, he knows those things that, you know, we food plebs won't know about, so he goes right up to the onions. And sniffs them in order to find that you know, particular ripeness is the only thing I can
And here's the thing, you and
Yamachan
and the commentators like totally take the bait. They're like, wow, he's so good. He's so knowledgeable of food. He's sniffing the onion. Have you ever seen someone sniff an onion before? Not like that. He must know something. He has the forbidden knowledge. It's like, no, actually, that was just dumb.
Are you saying he made a deal with the devil? Like, the devil's like, I can give you the power to understand onions by smell alone if you give me your soul.
It's just like, what was he doing? It's funny. It made for a good clip, right, for his intro in during the opening credits sequence, right? That was about it.
Oh, it's definitely a highlight reel for him. Like, if he ever was an actor, it'd be like, look at this 3-second clip of me smelling an onion.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
He's channeling his inner Shrek. Maybe he's curious about the anatomy of an ogre.
That was so
funny. All the layers.
Yeah.
But I mean, we did learn that Udai had some layers, at least. He wasn't entirely unrepentant for his later behavior that proved to be pretty, you know, selfish and socially awkward. He didn't really there wasn't that cohesion with everyone that everyone else seemed to have achieved pretty quickly, except for him and Taka. And I love Taka. He kind of took Udai under his wing, and, you know, they had a really good moment together. They like cried on the couch about like they both really wanted to take steps to be like better sons.
They bathed naked together too.
They bathed naked.
They might have touched butts. Like, there might have been butt contact. Just
we
on
saw
the
butts.
Bench.
We definitely saw
We did
saw
see butts.
Butts.
There were. They were there. They no, existed. It was, man, Taka tried so hard with Udai. Taka tried so hard. He gave him a chance when no one else would. When the whole house wrote Udai off. Taka was the one, you know, he was the big brother of the whole house. He was the one that was just like, I don't know, like, you know, he would be patient with them and he'd be loving with them, you know, in like a big brotherly kind of way. It was really touching to see.
And yeah, it was super touching. And it was even more sad when he was getting ready to leave and Taka's just like, you know, are you leaving, essentially leaving because are you giving up? Is basically what it was.
Oh, like, I know. That cut me to the core. I was like, woo!
Right. He just like, because it's that sad thing, right? Where like, he is just refusing to change.
Yeah.
You know, and no one can get through to him, it seems like. And I think that's as much as, you know, Udai is made for an entertaining character. If that's who he is as a person, it makes me so sad.
But to say, you know, I mean, yeah, that is who he is today. Right? Like 5-10 years down the road, he's going to look back at his time in Terrace House. I'm sure he's going to regret some of it, especially, I mean, man, there's so much to regret for Udai, but especially that
the chopstick cry.
Well, the chopstick cry. Like, there's so many moments. Yeah. Like, especially the part where he was trying to get back with his ex, right?
Oh,
like,
my God.
Right before Christmas. And that talk there was one of the highlights for me of all of part one. That was right at the end near part one, right? And he's like, you know, it really hurts me to put my own socks on.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy.
I thought I could get through that without laughing.
The kind of guy who can somehow, because apparently that's not true. His girlfriend was like, I've never done that. So he's the kind of guy who can convince himself that he needs someone so much that at one point his girlfriend put his socks on for him.
He's so incredibly out there. He's so a sociopath. Like, what? Right? Like,
what did his grandma do to him growing up?
No.
Stop putting his socks on, woman. What's wrong with you?
It was just crazy to me because I thought, especially like, because he did have like dinner with his mom at one point, and I thought like, oh, this is where we're going to see like she's super doting, she spoils him or whatever. But even she was like calling him out and being like, you need to be more independent. You need to stop, you know, burdening others and think about other people. And it's just like, it feels like, I had in my notes that like it feels like he read a ton of like shoujo manga and was like, this is the way that this one trope of character acts, and I'm going to do that. Because even when he was on the date with his ex, like he like messed up a line, like he was trying to say something cool and then he said it again, and it's like, you literally seem like you're trying to play a character. But I also, but I don't think like he's faking the way that he can't take care of himself.
Whoa.
It's magnificent that we got him so early in the show.
Because
you know, sometimes the beginning of Terrace House is the hardest to watch, especially the first episode, because they're all strangers, they're all kind of forced to interact, but you kind of almost immediately have a villain that you can all band together and hate and love hating. And not many parts of Terrace House really have that. And I think it makes opening new doors one of the easiest to like show new people, you know, hey, have you never seen Terrace House before? Watch these episodes.
Yeah, watch this motherfucker with the Saw Chan and Yu Chan.
Yeah.
Watch this guy. Like, if they don't have their own Twitter account, I'm starting it now.
Oh my God. It was So like part one definitely was like just Yudai's lack of character arc. Cause it was frustrating because I feel like I have to disagree with something that you said, Jack, in that I think Shion was also really trying to get, and Mizuki in her own way, trying to get through drunk to him. And yeah, like
they gave up.
They gave up much quicker than Taka's. Yeah,
Shion like drove him to like job interviews, but you can't help the guy that you're driving to a job interview if he chooses to wear sunglasses into the job interview and just look totally disinterested.
Yeah, I wear a hoodie and I think jeans or whatever the hell like you're wearing.
Yeah.
You're just wearing casual street clothes to a job interview.
Yeah. Everyone was upset at the end when, you know, he announced that he was leaving. He also, didn't he announce that he was leaving at like a party? And it was like, wow, way to bring down the mood.
And no, it was someone else's going away party, I thought.
Yeah, and he just
was like, oh yeah, it's like also me. Because Mizuki had a hard time in part one, too.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just, I definitely feel like, and I think we already talked about this, but like, if like years down the line, if he goes back and watches this, I think this is going to be a grounding thing for him. Like, you know what I mean? It's... He's gonna realize it's really humiliating, like a lot of the stuff that he did.
I hope so, for his sake, and I hope he grows from it. In all honesty,
yeah, I wish him the best, and thank you for the entertainment, I guess.
Who is the same anymore from when they were 18 or 19?
God,
think how much people transform. Exactly. So I hope for the best for him.
It's formative years, man.
But damn it, if it wasn't fucking fun to watch him.
Oh yeah,
wreck everything.
You're like, what we're talking about?
That.
Oh, go ahead, Daily.
No, yeah, the moment that, like, everyone was very, they did their best to talk to him, but I feel like the best part was when Mizuki did call him out after she had drunk, like, 7 beers or something like that, because it was like, that was, like, everything I was thinking, and I think that made it all the worse, though, that he didn't want to accept it, like, the criticism that he was getting.
Ooh. Yeah, I think it was after that moment that generally the house realized he's kind of like a lost cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like my favorite way to like cap off this Yudai discussion is just reminding everyone about that magnificent date he had with Ami.
Well, here's the thing about it, right? Like Taka, again, had his best interest in mind, gave him great advice. Don't talk too much. Don't let her drive. And again, this is going to drive me crazy that he's like asking people on dates and then saying, by the way, you have to learn to drive so we can go on this date.
And on top of that, the place was like an hour and a half away by driving.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's just like, dude, you have no sense of respect for other people right now. And it's kind of amazing. And it's just that he doesn't, like we've already mentioned many times that he doesn't get hints. Watching that date, and watching him ask, like, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you to be on this date? 1. And he's still like, cool, awesome. Like,
yeah, all right.
Bagel birds. Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, at the same time, maybe I wish I kind of had a little bit of that blissful ignorance.
I don't know, dude. Dude's
just in his own little world. Yeah, I know. But, like, just a tidbit of it, just because he's just pulling through. He's just pulling through. I don't know.
Yeah. He's barely making it through life. He can't get his own damn socks off.
Yeah, apparently not. Like, and he can't sleep without his panda bears.
He has daddy's credit card and the panda bears.
Oh my God, I have my dad's credit card. I forgot about that part.
But
credit card.
While we're talking about that era of Terrace House, it is also the start of one of the most beautiful relationships on TV.
The most blooming love is blooming in the air.
Ever.
Love is blooming on a battlefield.
Yeah, let's start talking about Shion and Tsubasa.
Shion and Tsubasa. I mean, I was really worried, and I think Tsubasa was too at first, because it's like they were really cool with each other, but it seemed like it was only going to be a friendship at first, just because they're very different types. You know, she's very sporty and she's very focused on her career as a hockey player. And, you know, he's a model. Those are pretty much two different worlds. And that's why it felt, again, really like shoujo manga. Like, Yudai wanted to be in a shoujo manga, but Tsubasa and Shion were actually living it.
Yeah.
he like really well established himself as like a really good person. And but then I kind of distrusted Shion at first because he was so smooth with lines like, "We'll take it slow. I'll wait for your heart to open."
Yeah.
When they went to, you know, the foot bath in Kuruizawa Q, it was like, oh my gosh, is he pulling out lines like that? Does he really mean them? But he did. He did.
I mean, he was buying her like good luck charms, right, to put on her hockey equipment for the games. I think where it really went over the edge, at least from my perspective, was when he saw her play. And not only does she play hockey, she is like world class, right? She's like really good. She's the team captain. She's like the Gretzky of her team, essentially. And she's so good that even other teams recognize her skill and are trying to recruit her over to their side.
Yeah.
You know, like, to help her grow and to have her help out the team. So she is not just good. She's great. And I think that just him seeing that after and Shion was never even familiar with hockey, if I remember right. I think it was like one of the first times he ever watched it in person. That was something that he never experienced before, it seemed like. It really he was smitten after that at that point.
Yeah, and it's just like just to solidify how good she is, like her team won 8-3 in one game, or along those lines at least. Like it was insane. And she couldn't even remember how many scores she made by the end of
goals.
It.
Goals.
Like,
they're called goals, Roberts.
How many numbers she put on the
touchdowns.
On
how
the
many strikes did I get?
How many dragon balls did she put in the dragon net?
Uh-huh.
Oh my god.
Look, I don't give a puck. So
slow clap. Slow
thank
clap.
Thank you.
Yes, yes.
All I'm saying is she's fucking good at hockey.
Very.
Everything after that, just I don't think there. So there was the one moment where Shion was kind of shaky about whether or not he actually had feelings for Tsubasa. And at that point, like, I was like, oh no, like it, because like there was a moment there was like an episode or two where it felt like it was going to kind of collapse in on itself. And then what happened exactly? Didn't Tsubasa get him something? And then it kind of like solidified.
Shion got him. I can't remember.
Wait, yeah, so
Tsubasa got him something. Yeah, remind
got him
me,
a
really.
Gift.
Yeah, so it was a roller coaster. I wasn't prepared for the level of emotion that was happening there, because up until that moment that he was meeting with the other guys and talking about, they were like, oh, you know, you like only hang out with Tsubasa. You always go out with Tsubasa. You know, they went on an ice skating date. They went and played basketball together. You know, they were doing a lot of things that they seemed like to genuinely enjoy together. And it was just really beautiful to watch. But then it was him and the other guys sitting in the room, and he was like, you know, I really like her, but I just can't see being in a relationship with her. And then after that, he actually, because this is when Sena had already showed up, and he asked out Sena at one point, and she was like, because he was like, do you want to go out to dinner or something like that? And she was like, is this a date? And he's like, well, yeah, of course. And she's like, no, I can't do that to Tsubasa. And like, whoa, it was a lot to deal with at once. It was kind of satisfying because I was like, yeah, no, you can only go after Tsubasa.
Yeah, because I mean, I just want to echo what the panelists always say about Sena is like, no matter what she does, she always has the girls' backs.
She does.
And
she
that's
really
like
does.
A classic moment.
Yeah, no, it's a classy move there on that part. And you know what? Thinking about it, 2020 hindsight now, I really feel like Shion had feelings for her even when he said that he didn't. I really feel like that was a defense mechanism almost on his part, because she wasn't necessarily reciprocating moving the relationship to the next phase. And so I feel like Shion was kind of concerned about being hurt, and he was scared to like her too much, right? Because he wasn't getting the signs that it was going to be a romantic kind of thing. It was more like a friendship kind of thing. Because they both kind of agreed, it came forth, you know, later in the series, that they both of them were scared to make a move. And even Tsubasa, when he straight up asked her to be his girlfriend, she's like, really? Are you sure you want me? Like,
me?
You know,
me?
Even at that point, like, I literally asked you point blank. Like, yes, I'm sure. So they both needed some reassurance, because it's just such an unlikely pairing, right?
Yeah.
Classically.
And it is. And I think that, I mean, Shion, for the most part, like literally every single move he made was super, like, killing it. Dude was just like nailing it every single time. It was so funny watching that in contrast to what was going on with Yudai.
Yeah. And like, Ami, yes.
Yeah. But like Shion was just killing it, dude. He's ridiculously smooth. He knew exactly what to say in nearly every situation. Only part that bothered me was when he actually asked her, right, to be his girlfriend. Instead of, like, you know, them sitting there talking about it, they just kind of, like, laugh it off. And then he, like, Shion's like, okay, bye. I'm going to go tell the whole house now.
Yeah, that was very fucking fifth grade. And oh, I loved my God, it. So I was like, is this how it works in Japan? Like, I don't know. I'm ignorant. Like, is that how you do things there?
I'm in love, and I want the whole world to know about it.
Yeah, I do think it was, like, the reason why they didn't get together earlier was just, like, a communication problem. And as soon as Tsubasa, on Shion's birthday, like, decorated the playroom and, like, got him this scarf that she got, like, on a special trip that she took, especially for finding him a gift to Tokyo, he took that as, like, oh, wait, yes, this is the real sign that, you know, she actually likes me. Yeah. And that I can probably move forward from there, as compared to the not so good, not so, well, I think it was good, but not so well received surprise gift that Taka gave Ami.
Oh, I love that gift though. It was so good. The shave mustache.
Mustache.
He hid it so well behind the birthday. He literally went in between. It was like they were having the party, and then he like ducked out real quick to the bathroom, shaved his mustache, came back with the cake, and like hid it behind his face.
Man. I was cringing that entire time.
For it was really hard to watch.
Ami did say that she doesn't like the mustache, right? So that's why he was like, okay, this is the key. This is it.
Not only that, she also said, if only you were 5 years younger, something like
that's
that.
That's it, yeah. And he thought
she and he took that as, I got an in. And she meant, you don't have any in. It was like another breakdown in communication.
Although,
it was classic.
Can I just say, non-mustache Taka, it's not my favorite Taka, but he looks damn young without it.
He does. Yeah. He does look younger.
Yeah. I don't know. I love that moment of when he revealed, like, he just sits there. He doesn't even say anything. He's not like, you like my not stash. He just sits there and everyone else starts giggling. And then Ami looks around and is like, what? Like, she doesn't even register it.
So it was really hard to watch for me, man. Cause it was just like, he was trying so hard for Senpai to notice him.
It was Kohai in that case, though, because she's so much younger.
Quite. Yeah, I guess you're right. Kohai, my bad.
But yeah.
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 It was just, it was cringy, and it was one of those things where it's like, oh, Taka, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was hoping he would rise above. But
yeah.
Right.
Personally, I think what kind of was a little more cringy was the way that Shohei was viewing Ami, in the sense that he was like, I think there's like, she has a dark side and I want to shine a light on that. And it's like, what does that mean, Shohei? What does that mean?
You know, at this point, after seeing all of Shohei up into part 4, I'm just convinced he doesn't really know how to talk to women on like a relationship level.
Ooh. I mean, he was single when we met him, right? He didn't talk about being I can't remember him talking about being in a relationship or anything like that. I remember his motivation was that he wanted to go to Tara's house to have motivation and have life experience so he could, you know, compose more music.
Yeah.
Where's the Terrace House cringe compilation 2018?
But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty evident. We're kind of cheating ahead, but it's pretty evident, right, that he's just not experienced in the field of relationships.
No. And I think it stems from the fact that he is a singer. Like, you know, you have to have a very dramatic mind to be like the lyricist, right? And like, we've all heard a lot of his lyrics are very artistic, let's say. Mm-hmm, and in some ways, that kind of leads him to like think of women more as objects, and the idea of, you know, you're not someone for me to love, you're someone for me to have an experience with so that way I can write about it.
You've thought about this.
Wow. Yeah, so you're saying he's viewing people as props, essentially.
Yeah, people are just foils for him to create more written words for music.
Maybe. I mean,
isn't there a song about that?
if he came into the house with that attitude, perhaps. I mean, I can see the logic.
I mean, I do feel like he genuinely liked Ami, considering that he like broke down in tears when
I wanted to take you to Disneyland.
We should have gone to Disneyland.
If only.
And it is like emotional if you like, you know, have a crush on that person and suddenly, you know, you're realistically not really going to see them again. Oh. You know, that is hard, but it was, I think it does say that he must have really liked her. to do that. And he did wind up writing a song, right? It was Password. It was the Password song.
Yep.
Give me the password, girl.
What's unconvincing to me, though, is that it's a pretty quick turnaround from crying about Ami to going gung-ho on Senna.
Gung-ho.
Yeah, I mean, he just failed at all steps, man. I feel like he had a really rough patch there at Terrace House. Ye old Terrace House.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, where did he win, really? I mean, and I feel like of all the guys, he probably cried the most. I mean, Taka cried a fair amount with him, like some of the more touching scenes, but Shohei
cried
a lot. Cried
the most.
Shohei cried a lot.
He's an ugly crier, too.
He had a tough time.
Yeah.
By the way, on Instagram, I love that his picture is the chalk drawing of his giant ears.
I love that. Didn't you draw those a little big? No, it's perfect.
Yeah. It captures his persona.
No, right. I do appreciate that, like, everyone, like, ugly cried, though, on the show. I think it, you know, is that authenticity.
Also a lot of alcohol, let's be honest.
maybe so. Yeah, maybe so.
Had a role to play.
So Ami leaves, and now we're into part three, and we enter in with Mayu. And the first thing that we talk about with Mayu is, of course, her beautiful face, right?
Oppai.
Her face. Just her face.
What does that mean? What's that word you guys keep saying?
Oppai?
Yeah. What's that mean?
Daily, please explain.
Is it just breasts?
Boobies.
Yeah. It's not the polite word for breasts.
No, it's not.
Like, chest is mune, oppai are like, it would be like slang. Boobies.
Yeah. It's
is
like,
it immature like boobies? Or is it like...
Oh, yeah.
Choto. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A little bit.
Okay. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so, yeah. And I'm just going to say, that's what they all say on the show, too.
Okay, can you zoom in any farther?
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Should we zoom in? He's like, should we just
She finish? Does have a really beautiful face as well, though. No, I mean, she is gorgeous, and she, you know, comes in pretty quickly after Ami leaves, and not a lot of people are home. It's only the guys, right?
And it's only Chion and Shohei, right?
Yeah.
And is that the one where it was, like, same day, and she, like, just... That not even like a transition shot. It was just like she just appeared.
Quick. I remember it was
whiplash
quick.
A little bit, and yeah. She was like, I'm you know, an erotic model. I model like bikinis and stuff." And
yeah, I think Shohei still had tears in his eyes when she showed up from Ami Limi.
It's okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and it was her introduction was a little strange to me in that, you know, she like came in and she seemed very nice. And she was like, it's late in the day. It's nighttime at that point. She's been traveling all day. She's going to go get in the bath. And while she's gone, first of all, everyone's looking at her Instagram and zooming in as far as they can on her chest.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But then we have the dual moment of like the camera being kind of a voyeur in the bathroom. And I'm sure like that was a done shot that she obviously agreed to, but like you almost see her chest. Like she's not wearing a bra in that sweater that she was wearing.
You know, you definitely get the bare back, but you definitely see more dude butt. Like, I don't think the show is really quite at the level of showing like female, you know, very much below the waist. You know what I mean? Like, but you'll see like Taka and and Yudai's butt, right? So I thought that was an interesting choice. You would think that it would be, like, equal, but it wasn't.
I don't think we're going to get, like, full frontal or anything
nor do I want that. But I mean, like, from just an academic, point of view, I just thought it was interesting that you would show two dudes' butts and not the obvious choice, you know, right, when she's taking a bath, too. I just, thought it was interesting.
It's interesting, too, because Terrace House has a history of bringing on models, both male and female models.
Yeah.
But this is the first female model where, like, she's had a show, like, a scene like that. Right, where it's a little bit more erotic because she's an erotic model. I'm curious if that was just part of the contract. Maybe like, hey, we'll take you on to Terrace House, but like, you're gonna be.
We need some side boob.
Yeah. Right, and that was like, it was a little jarring to me, at least to me personally, when that whole scene happened, because I was like, is this scene happening in my pure, version of Terrace House?
You're probably sitting right next to Robert too on the couch. Your hands might have been brushing up against each other.
My hands were.
My God.
No, but you know what? What was more telling for me and more foreboding about Mayu's entrance into the house was that she really did not waste too much time before showing just how agreeable and amiable her personality could be when she likes somebody, right? She had her eye on him immediately, started being very much, I'm just like you. We're great friends. We should go outdoors together. We should have kids and a dog. I want the same amount of kids and a dog as you. And I want to live outdoors. You know what I mean? It was very creepy, and it ended up really being her downfall. The fact that she couldn't really reel that mirroring tendency in.
Well, yeah, I mean, throughout Mayu's time at Terra's house, it was really hard to figure out exactly what her personality was. Like, right. I mean, we know what her personality is, right? But, like, we don't really know Mayu very well. You know what I'm saying? Like, every time she would talk with someone, it would be with someone she likes, and she would be seemingly conforming her personality to whatever their preferences are.
The things that I liked about her, I actually tend to really be responsive to, like, a bubbly, kind of effervescent, loud, you know, kind of extrovert personality. I respond well to that. Like, it makes me smile. It gives me energy to be around energetic people, you know. So those are the things that I take away from her personality that I liked and that I thought were positive. But the fact that, again, she's a villain, right? So she's like, doesn't clean up her dishes, or she, you know, doesn't do the laundry or whatever. So those were the things that seemed that to annoy everyone, especially Taka, who ended up giving her that lecture.
Taka chewed her out. Date.
Oh, yeah. Taka's just like, this shit ain't gonna fly, fam.
No. I mean, he was a lot more polite, but yeah.
Keep in mind, he got along fine with Yudai, but did not like Mayu's dish non-doing.
I feel like it was more like that conversation that that Taka did have with Mayu about, like, that he wasn't really into her. Like, that was the point, was that, like, he wasn't into her, but he did kind of get on, like, the big brother mode of, like, you know, you should, you know, clean up after everyone versus just yourself, and then leaving, you know, stuff like that. It was interesting though, because I think he kind of saw ahead of time that she was like maybe going to like do the thing that she had already been doing with everyone else and suddenly start pursuing him and be like, oh, I love the outdoors, oh, I love snowboarding.
Yeah. So maybe that was just him putting up his wall like pretty quick. Like, from the get-go.
You know, he's like, oh, you like Tsubasa? Oh, I was going to learn to play hockey, so.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, but she did cry when she figured out what was going on between
Shion
and Tsubasa.
That reminds me, she did it in that public forum right above, this, like, at the top of the stairs. She's like, please, someone notice me. Oh, that was so hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But
can we talk about the biggest target she set her sights on for so, so long? Noah-kun? So after Shion and Tsubasa are like done, like they're a couple, happy for them, their Instagram photos are adorable, but it's now horrible. They're out of the house and they're replaced by Noah and Yui, and Noah is high spec, to quote the show.
Most high spec,
very high
in
spec
in show history. Yes,
like he's basically a made kid, son of a big old airline company, and Mayu just goes hard for him. Fucking ham, like I'm all in. And Noah's defense mechanism is, I'm gonna watch SpongeBob.
That was the funniest part too. It was just like they were always like, oh, we were watching SpongeBob when this happened. I'm like, what were you doing? Because like no other media has been named other than SpongeBob in Terra's house thus far.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Steven Hillenburg.
Rest in peace, Steven Hillenburg.
Dang.
But yeah, I think it's great.
It was like it's like some schoolyard shit when that whole thing first started. Like, I think the first big like red flag scene I remember between Noah and Mayu was when it was the part where he was like in the playroom and I think he goes to get something from the fridge and then she's literally like following him to like 2 feet behind him and like in his grill when he's getting in the fridge. Like, it was like one of those scenes where like he closed the fridge and there she was. He was like, ah, like
turn around, ah.
Yeah. Mayu, what are you doing here?
Oh man, those were some of the highlights for me.
It was like a girl following around a boy in like second grade or something, or vice versa. You know, it was a schoolyard thing. It reminded me of.
All she had to do was just shut up and be herself, and do her own thing and not care. You know what I mean? And she couldn't. Yeah. She couldn't control herself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd hope that this show was a learning experience for her. You know.
And I mean, and this isn't like part four, but like when she did leave, she did say like, you know, she had kind of like met a goal in the sense that, you know, she had been in a very long-term relationship before and she wasn't sure if she'd be able to fall in love again, but she was. So with that confirmed, she felt like she could move on, which I think is kind of growing in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of, and that brings up a somewhat common theme in Terrace House for some people that go onto the show. I feel like almost using Terrace House as a purgatory is not an uncommon motivation, if that makes sense. Like, I'm post-relationship. You know what I'm saying?
Like a gap year.
Right.
From reality.
Exactly.
A transitioning tool.
Are we calling it Lost? Are we saying Terrace House is the Lost of Japan?
Spoilers for Lost.
Spoilers for Lost that's actually just on Terrace House.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, the plane landed on top of Terrace House. We just look back at all the episodes of Terrace House and you just see the first season of Lost like hidden in each frame and you just never noticed it before.
No, that's the next season. That's the next series. It's going to be Terrace House, except it's like they're stranded on an island.
Terrace House.
So Aloha
Fiji.
State.
Oh.
And then there's a smoke monster.
Yep.
And then it's over.
And he's going to grow too. He's going to get a character arc.
When he leaves the island, everyone's so sad.
The smoke monster gets rejected. They didn't take it to Disney World. And then it wins a hockey game.
Oh,
no, I did want to ask you guys, though, how did you hold up emotionally when Shion and Tsubasa left? Because that was hard.
Is that part 3 or part 4?
That's part 3.
Oh, okay.
I thought, like, I mean, they're together, and it was one of those things where it's like, I might have wanted to see a little bit more of them being together, just for funsies. But it was one of those things where, like, based on past experience with Terrace House, when people get together, it kind of starts to stagnate a little bit. Like, I guess the entertainment value of it kind of stagnates. Yeah.
The courtship is what you're there for, is what you're saying.
Right. That's where I'm in the same boat, where I'm very happy that they're together and I'm glad I can still follow them on social media.
Totally.
But if I were following them, they were still on the show, I'd be a lot less interested, I think. So I knew that was like the perfect time for them to jump ship.
That's an opportunity for the show overall, the series overall. I think they haven't really been successful at making it worth our while as an audience to see what it's like to maintain a relationship. Really, everything stems on getting to know each other, getting to know strangers, getting to feel out each other's emotions, right? And seeing whether a relationship is going to bloom or not. And typically, people are pretty fast to get out of the house when they realize there's not love there. Mm-hmm. That's definitely one of the pain points people feel. They're like, I'm gone by. It's not going to happen for me here.
Right.
And think about the Guilty Samurai, right? Think about Tai Chi and Chikako. Yeah, that was like the finale, right, of that series. And that was like the courtship ultimately coming to a head. And that was how that one ended. So, sorry, spoilers.
But that was the only entertaining part, like, at that point in the series.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, though. But the show still has not shown any couple, like, making it interesting, again, as an audience member watching it. They've never been able to show what it's like to nurture an existing relationship in an entertaining way. So maybe it's an opportunity. It's never happened. So maybe it will never happen. Maybe it's just not in the DNA of the show.
I wonder if... So, I mean, we had things like the meat incident in Boys and Girls in the City, which was technically a bit of like a lover's quarrel.
Bro, I would have broke up over that shit.
We know
it ain't no quarrel.
I don't want to spoil too much for Daly since he hasn't seen Boys and Girls yet.
We'll get there.
But... I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from, Jack. I think that, when it's something lovey-dovey like Tsubasa and Shion, where, like, I don't really see them getting over the honeymoon phase, like, very quickly. You know what
they're
I'm saying?
They're still in it, dude. Look on Instagram. They're still
That's
on
what I'm saying.
Phase.
Like, so I just, them specifically, I don't think there's a lot of entertainment value. But when you have something that's a little bit more seemingly disjointed, like I think I predict, by the way, this whole Sena and Noah thing is going to turn out.
This is it. I hope they're gone soon, actually. I'm going to pull a Yamachan on that. I hope they're out.
That's going to be a whole mess. But I think it's just harder, right? When people actually really like each other, go figure, right?
Yeah.
To get some entertainment out of it, because it's just like, yeah, we're a thing. We go out, we do.
Question for the table here, okay? All three of you guys, okay? If Shion and Tsubasa being in a relationship can't be interesting on the show for more than 3-4 episodes, who the hell can? That's my question.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like it's going
to
happen.
Like, yeah. Something I kind of want to bring up, too, is, like, this isn't just a thing on Terrace House. Like, if you think back to a lot of the most famous romance stories, you know, either books, movies, TV shows, etc., the romantic part of the story is part of the courtship. That's mostly it. Like, how did they fall in love with each other? What grand gestures did they do? But once they're together, the only time it's interesting again is when they're fighting or when, you know, there's like some kind of disagreement that they're having. It's never interesting to watch them just be like, I love you too. And just, you know, there isn't anything fun to watch. And I think that translates across Terrace House to all kinds of romantic media.
Right. Because, I mean, it hits a point where, yeah, the relationship is fun for the two people in it, assuming it's a good relationship, right? But, like, otherwise, I mean, it's just, you know, the normal shit that, I mean, couples do shit together. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, media has been, profiting off of, you know, a will-they-won't-they plot for as long as media has existed. And Tsubasa and Shion was, like, the perfect kind of will-they-won't-they because it seemed like they definitely would. But would they? We don't really know. Yeah. But now that we do, it's like, okay, I'm satisfied with my answer.
And right. We've gotten through the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. It reached its natural denouement.
Like, let me ask you guys, if Shion and Tsubasa had came on to Terrace House at episode one and they were already like, hey guys, we're a couple, we're already dating, would you be as interested in watching all of their dates up until when they left?
Probably not.
Only if there was some kind of drama in it. There would have to be some ebb and flows. It couldn't just be like, hey, we're great and boring.
Yeah.
Hey, but we went to the grocery store again.
But I don't want them to have drama. I want them to be happy. So, yeah, it is. It would be just be like, leave already. Like, you know, Yama was very much, you know, everyone on like the panel was very much into their relationship and, you know, like back in episode 7, theorizing like how they would like have sex, which was like... Kind of an uncomfortable conversation.
Agreed.
But then at the end, you know, Yama was like literally like, just leave. They need to leave. Stop it. They're happy.
Yeah, it's like that's just a common thing. Whenever a couple gets together, the whole like panel's like, ah, yine. And Yama's just like, can't wait for them to leave.
So stupid. Get out of here.
Thank
Get
you,
out
next.
Of here. So move on to the next one. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Right, we want to see somebody else eat food at various restaurants. We don't need you anymore.
It's interesting here because, like, Daly, you said you don't want to see drama from them. You want them to succeed. You want them to flourish. You want them to grow. And so we don't want to see, you know, negativity or any kind of disagreements between Shion and Tsubasa. And so I agree with that for the most part. However, when we're talking about a relationship that maybe I'm not as big a fan of, right? We're going into – I don't want to get too much into part four, but, like, Noah and Santa, right? Like – I want to see that fail in like a blaze of glory.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I want to see that go down in flames. And I don't know why. I feel evil saying that. But
because it's going to. It's just not built on a solid foundation whatsoever.
I just can't wait. I just can't wait. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more, you know, in part four. But I'm just like, it's interesting how, you know, two different couples, same house, same season. But I feel so different about them. Like so vastly different.
Yeah. I mean, Tsubasa and Shion, they were both like universally likable. Like everyone liked them. Like no one had a beef with them. Whereas Sena can rub people the wrong way and Noah can definitely rub people the wrong way. Although at first he seemed to be, other than being like kind of lazy and kind of like not really knowing what he wanted to do with his life, he seemed to be fine. He seemed to be like just another cool dude. Maybe not on the like same kindness and thoughtfulness level as Shion, but... he seemed pretty cool and it seemed pretty straightforward that he and Yui were like clicking and they were probably going to get together. And yet we have the plot twists that are part four.
Rip. Ooh, yep, cliffhanger. Nice.
He's just your average $1 billion baby.
Skymark.
Yep. He's got to make that money though. He's got to earn that. What is it? 10 million yen in order to take his pilot's license test.
It's expensive to be a pilot and the world needs more pilots.
True. I think we're the only major couple arc that we're missing from parts one through three is the beautiful and amazing Shohei and Sena.
See, that's the thing. I thought that was like a done deal. I mean, not again to spoil, but like the fact that like as soon as Shohei came on and even though Sena was like well, you know, when he's at the house, he's like at like 15%. But then when he's singing, he's like at 150%. It's like that. From that quote onward, I was like, yeah, they're probably going to date at some point.
You know, that really struck a negative chord with me because, you know, like Colin, I actually used to be a singer, you know, up on stage. And I don't know about you, Colin, but I always had a complex when I had a rule, a personal rule about myself. Like, I never dated anyone that I met at a show. Did you ever have any kind of similar rules like that? Or any lines you drew for yourself?
I played in the type of band that we didn't get a whole lot of girls showing up to shows, and when they were, it was like somebody's girlfriend.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
And I mean, I mean, there were like one, like a handful, like a small handful of times where, I mean, that sort of thing. Like,
mic, not into your hand.
Yeah, we had random people. We had random people like show up to our show, and they were like obviously there just to hook up, and it was clear as day that like that's the reason they were there, and it was like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, when Santa said that about show, hey, I just cringed so hard. I was like, fuck, that's like my biggest fear, right? I would never want to meet someone at a show because all they know from you is you're singing, you're on stage, you have this whatever false or true power, you know, to command attention.
Dynamic, yeah.
Yeah. And so I always had that hard rule. So it always stuck out to me.
What's kind of odd though about that is Santa would know more about Shohei than just him as a singer, right? Because she lives with him. But at the same time, the only time she really ever complimented him or thought he was cool was when he was singing.
Right.
You know, which I think is a good way to illustrate like that power dynamic you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. I mean, because quite frankly, that just on a slight tangent here, like most members of like bands and stuff like that, they're just normal people, you know? They're not like off the stage, really not all that interesting, right? I mean, they put on their pants the same way we do, so.
Same.
I put mine on like crisscross backwards, so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, never mind.
I put mine on top of my head down to my feet.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So you cut a hole in the crotch of your jeans. Yeah, I know, right?
Oh my god! But yeah, getting back to Shohei and Sena.
Wearing a friggin' romper.
So yeah, Shohei and Sena. I remember I was rocked by the end of part three. The first like
you were nonplussed
of that episode.
Oh, me and Robert both.
Yeah, that was insane.
Oh yeah, I guess we can talk about that.
This is the birthday
the kiss
date.
Out of nowhere. We have to talk about the kiss. All right. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I guess we're going to spend some time talking about this. We have to, right?
We have
to. So, this man, Shohei, I give him props for a lot of things. He really was trying to woo Sena.
Yes.
Hardcore prior. Like, he was taking her out to very nice, expensive dates.
And picking strawberries.
Having people sing happy birthday. He made her lunch, if you remember. They went out on some swing or something or some park. Like, he was trying very, very hard. And in his head, he had this narrative going on, like, I'm going to kiss her at her birthday. This is when it's all going to coalesce. It's all going to come together. She's going to realize I'm a real man. I'm not just a singer. You know, she's going to realize that I'm assertive and I'm powerful. And this is where she's going to fall in love with me. That's what I feel like he was saying to himself. And then,
it's a male power fantasy.
And then, I can't. Okay, someone else take the mic. I can't go.
So
Daily, I want to. Yeah, I'd like to hear
from
your take
from a
on
female
this.
Perspective. As much as media and literature and everything else seems to purport that like sudden kisses are very romantic and great. If you're not prepared for that, it's really not cool. Especially if you don't know how you feel about that person, it's just going to overcomplicate it. And I was really surprised that the panel didn't really pick up on that. Like when they went back home after, you know, the kind of it was not a well executed kiss either. You know, she even kind of said some like vaguely, you know, stopping words like money.
What?
Yeah. That's an understatement.
What?
Can we? But like, I just want to re-illustrate the physics of that kiss. She was looking away from him.
Yeah.
Mid-sentence, mid-syllable, and he claws the side of her head to rotate her around to him to kiss her.
Yeah, they're like standing next to each other.
Okay, blanket
like
statement,
shoulder to
right?
Shoulder.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here for Shohei, but blanket statement, like that was totally the wrong move. That was totally not the way to do it. Timing was poor. overall, the entire execution was poor of that. Everything was bad about it. But in his head, I really think Shohei saw that going down like the way Noah pulled it off in actuality. That's how Shohei saw it in his mind's eye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's how he thought it was going to play out.
And I think
that's how he thought it was going
to
play out.
And I think that is like how the panel saw it too. The judges saw it, because then they were like, when they came home and, you know, everyone was very quiet and they're like, oh, you guys were out late. And they were like, oh, you know, Sena, she's got that look that she has. It's the look of a woman. It's like, she's been wooed. And it's like, I thought she looked like worried as hell and like uncomfortable. Yeah.
She looked like she just seen a fucking ghost.
I mean, very deer in the headlights is the best way I can describe it.
And then when tell them what happened, the other girls in the room, she used the verb form like "tu sacerarita," which is like, someone did this to me. Like, instead of saying like,
we kissed,
it was like, this was perpetrated onto me.
Then he put a kiss on my lips.
Yeah. So I was definitely, I saw some part four plot twists ahead of time just from that exchange.
So Daly, so the challenges I have with this whole timeline of events, and it helped me, like, help me understand, like, apparently he went to make a move on her in the cab afterwards, and she proceeded to kiss him multiple times on the car ride home. So
allegedly.
I mean, no, come on, guys. Don't throw conjecture on this. Like, no, I think that was like documented. Like, that happened. That was, at least that's how the narrative of the show happened. That's what the commentators were. We're not saying allegedly. That's not correct.
Well, no,
she actually kissed him in the car ride home.
If I remember right, wasn't it only Shohei who said it that happened?
No, I think you confirmed it. We'll go back and listen, but this was not like Shohei lying, dude. So, that's not doing justice to the scenario. Yeah. Okay, so like, I mean, right? Like, can you like shed any like, you know, kind of pull back the curtain on what mystery that might be? Like, why do you think she would have done that? You think it's like peer pressure? Like, do you think maybe she was trying it out? Maybe she was trying to give him a fair shot.
Yeah. I mean, it can be like the moment of like, well, you know, we have had a lot of fun together, and this was very nice of him to do this. I would feel like a jerk on, you know, to be like, no, stop it, on like my birthday, especially after I've agreed to go on these dates. And it almost feels like you've entered into the narrative that this is what's expected of you, that you're supposed to reciprocate this, even if you're not sure if you want to.
And she's on a show. She knows Terrace House. It ain't her first rodeo, literally.
Yeah.
Like, she knows it's a show about relationships.
One of the things
she's on stage.
I've always been nervous about watching reality TV is because, like, people are going to be expected to get into relationships. And, you know, sometimes people are very afraid to not live up to those expectations. So what if they're getting into situations that they don't really want to be in, but are just expected to be? So that's what I worried about with Sena and in the cab. And, you know, even if she was, you know, like trying it out, or, you know, felt peer pressured into it, you know, I don't blame her for not being super direct about it, even though she has been direct before. But after that line of events, it's kind of hard to be like, actually, no.
You know, it seems very transactional in a way.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay, you did this for me. Let's kiss and I'll give it a shot. But I feel like certainly by the time she came home, she pretty much had her mind up. I mean, that's why she took the world's saddest looking bath afterwards, right?
Like, oh my gosh, yeah.
She was not happy about it.
It was like she was cleaning his filth off.
Oh.
Oh, damn, dude. I think like everyone, I would hope everyone in this on the show can relate to, you know, liking someone more than someone liking you back. So I can't help but like feel a little shred of sympathy for Shohei, because like I said, he saw this going very differently. He invested a lot of time, a lot of, you know, of his thought and of his time and of his, you know, money into fostering, you know, what he thought would be a meaningful long-term relationship, I'm sure, in his head.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so I feel bad for him. He got rejected in a bad way publicly.
I certainly don't think that in his head, like, because it certainly does not look good, that whole kiss scene and the other kiss scene later on at the campsite too. Can't forget about that.
Well,
even though it's part four.
Yeah.
Right. But like, and yeah, certainly in his head, like we've been saying, that he definitely doesn't see it as like a bad thing that he did, right? Like, he just kind of feels like it just happened because he wanted to happen. And he thought it was like a really romantic thing. And I don't know. I guess I'm kind of like just kind of reiterating what we've already said, but like, I don't know. It's one of those things where like, I don't know if I can really hate him for it, I guess is the problem.
No.
He's just clueless. Yeah. He's just clueless.
Right.
Just
like, I think he's genuinely just, he was just, it was just a bad judgment.
Do you hate Mayu? Mayu is also equally bad at reading the room.
Right.
Yeah. Just as bad as picking up people's thoughts, you know?
She could not pick up any of Noah's hints. But like, at the same time, part of this to me is that there's only a certain level of blinders you can have before you're very clearly impeding on other people's business. And like, to the point where you're, you know, kissing them, right? And there, it's hard for me to imagine a normally decently adjusted human being not picking up on the fact that, hey, after she kissed you once and she made a face like, eh? And like when you watch their dates after that and how they interact after that, it didn't seem like, hey, this is going to go somewhere. Like, you're in, you know?
Do they have dates after that? I don't even think they
did. I mean, but they had a lot of interactions after that, especially at the campsite. And it just didn't seem like those were interactions of two people who were equally in love with each other enough to want to pursue something.
Just like Mayu and anyone else that doesn't get it, right? Like, he had the narrative already out in his head. You know, if you ever seen that movie, it was like 50 First Dates or 500 Days. I can't remember which one it is. Where it's they do that really great scene where they split the screen and it's like expectations versus reality. And the guy goes to the party. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What I'm talking about? Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Check it out on YouTube. It's really good. But it's like showing like he goes to the party. He's expecting this girl that he loved and had a crush forever to fall in love with him. And like, so he goes there and like one side of the screen is showing that his fantasy play out. And then they're in love and they're kissing at the end of the night. And then the other side of the screen is the reality. And it's like, no, she's actually into this other guy. And you're just like a wallflower in this party and you're going to leave by yourself and it's going to go completely south. So
yeah,
check that on YouTube. It's actually really good cinema.
r/relatable.
Really?
Same.
Seriously.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like the fact that this is so complicated and the fact that, you know, people have been unsuccessful in, you know, replicating the kind of like ideal that I think, maybe not ideal, but like the ideal that like Shion and Tsubasa set, I think makes the show, like we said, like more entertaining. Like, not that I want to see people like get rejected and fail and feel bad, but you know, that's what reality TV is supposed to be.
It's all about rejection.
Rejection. Just life is rejection.
Life is one big no.
No.
That's what you'll find out.
Well, and it's also waiting for shit to be over with, but there's that too.
Same. It's waiting to hear the word no so you can go home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that got canceled. Oh, I'm so sad. Yes, I get to stay home and watch Terrace House.
Oh, hey, there it is.
So
listen to Todaima.
I think that we've pretty much covered a lot of the major events, part 1 through 3. Anyone else have anything they want to throw in?
I'm sorry. It's not 50 First Dates. It's driving me crazy. It's 500 Days of Summer. Please save your email rage.
Aha, other number.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking too. I was like, I've seen 50 First Dates.
That's with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, isn't it?
Yep.
No. 500 Days of Summer. Look that up. Expectations versus reality. It's fantastic cinema. Okay, that's it. Save your email. Save your rage, please.
There you go, guys. Watch The Waterboy by Adam Sandler. That's the one that Jack's talking about.
Yeah.
Mama said alligators are so angry because they got all those teeth and no toothbrush.
Gatorade. Okay, anyway. Okay, anything Terrace House related, Jack? Anything Terrace House related that you want to make sure we speak on now?
Woo, buddy. No, I'm just ready for us to recap the highlights of part 4 and then let's get on, man. I'm ready to have part 5 drop in my lap here on December 18th.
Soon.
Let's do it.
18th.
Yeah.
Come with us, guys. Come on. Let's go on this journey.
Let's wrap it up. So the next episode after this, we're going to be going through part 4, probably a little bit more in depth than we have with part 3, part 1 through 3, just because there are so many episodes. But with part 4, we're going to go a little more in depth because that's like right before what part 5 is. We're going to give you a refresh because it's probably been like 2 months since you binged part 4. Let's be real, right? So we're going to give you a good lowdown on that. Then we're going to have another episode on predictions, what we think is going to happen on part 5. We're going to record it so you can call us wrong and awful when part 5 actually airs.
Yes.
So that's pretty much the plan here. Leave us an iTunes review. We're live. We're going to be on iTunes very soon, if not already. and we're on YouTube and all that stuff as well.
Last final announcement. Yeah, we are going to start with next episode. Listen up for that. We are going to be starting a contest here because we're in the early days of our infancy as far as the show goes. So we're going to be doing some contests here for new listeners. And just stay tuned for next episode for more details on that and win some awesome prizes and help us promote the show. That's it.
Cool. This has been Tadaima. Thanks for listening. And we're off.
いただきます。
Email us at questions@terracehousepodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram at Tadaimagram, on Twitter at Tadaimapod, and check us out on Facebook and YouTube at Tadaima, a Terrace House Podcast.